Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
Hey, thanks for listening. The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe is with you live here. Being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Very special guest and also an alumnus of the show for many years. Patrick Meyer is with us, and we're going to get a chance to talk to Patrick. Patrick has a new book out. It's actually two books in one, and it's really, really cool. And we'll talk to Patrick here in just a moment. We also have Jeremy Kent with us. Jeremy is always a wonderful person to have as part of the Advertising Show, and a very great guy, and good news from across the pond with him. And a lot more to talk about as well. Advertising Show being powered by Shipple.com and a platform called Tendency, which is killer as it relates to marketing on the web. Check it out. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. Brad.
Hello.
How the heck are you?
Man, I'll tell you, if I was any better, I'd write a book about Steve Jobs and just call myself Patrick Meyer for a day or two.
It is a good book and a unique book, too, as things go. But Patrick has always been that way, out there in a good way.
For those that remember Patrick Meyer as our marketing insider, we've been doing this show since 2001. So if you remember Patrick, you've been a longtime listener. First-time caller. No, we don't accept calls. No. Anyway, yeah, it should be an interesting interview. I wanted to share this with you, or our audience, I should say. You know this, Ray. Years ago, back in the early 80s, yes, I'm that old, I was working at an ad agency.
That's old?
One of our clients, before I started my own firm in 1983, but
wait,
one of our
let
clients.
Let me guess, George Zimmer?
That's right.
Yes, I have that article as well.
He's been in the news lately, Men's Warehouse, and he guarantees it, of course. But what's interesting is when I and another guy, Jim Johnson, if you're listening, Jim, there's your plug. He went on to go to work for Saatchi in New York as well as in Europe, and I went on to start my own firm, as I mentioned. We used to sit there with George. He had many locations in Texas, wanted to expand beyond Texas. We helped open his first location in the Bay Area. Ultimately, he ended up, George, moving to the Bay Area and grew his company big since then. If you know anything about the Men's Warehouse, it's a huge company, public company. They do several billions of dollars of business each year in that category. But poor George, doesn't surprise me. We knew George then, and he's the same guy now. He's very passionate. He's a bit controlling, and he wants to see his company go a certain direction. Hired a guy to fill his shoes as CEO. He became chairman of the board, and the CEO, should we say, turned on him a bit and said, George, I'm running the deal now. You don't influence it anymore. And they got together and fired poor George. So, George, we wish you well. He's going to try to, I think, take a run at getting his company back, but I don't think it's going to work out because he doesn't have enough controlling interest.
Not the first time something like that has happened either, Brad. You know, you've got people who've placed companies in top positions here, and then the next thing you know, well, they're out. They're gone.
Right.
It really is not the Men's Warehouse without George. It doesn't make
sense.
He's
the brand.
Yeah.
He's the brand, and he... I think it was a mistake to do that. However, they did a deal on Jay Leno the other night with the Men's Warehouse. They're getting all kinds of great publicity. I've always thought they should have hired Donald Trump and done a commercial where they fire George Zimmer. Donald Trump would fire George Zimmer, and then, you know, they both get publicity.
Yeah,
Trump
right.
would do it for free just for the publicity. I'm joking. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how all that goes, but, you know, George is the brand. I think it was a mistake, but on the other hand, if you're working there, maybe George was stirring up some stuff, which wouldn't be surprising because he's very passionate, as I said, and wanted to see the company go one direction. But yet when you give up the CEO position, you're not really running the deal anymore. And the new CEO for the last two or three years supposedly has done very well increasing revenue. So can't argue with that if you're a shareholder.
Well, okay, and I understand George is getting $250 for the next few years anyway.
He owns 3 or 4% of the company, as I recall reading.
Yeah.
And if you look at the market cap on the company, just take 3% of whatever the current market cap is, and you wouldn't be feeling sorry for George anytime soon. $250 a year for the spots would be pocket change for George.
Mm-hmm. Says Zimmer opened his first men's warehouse with a hand painted sign. Boy, does this sound familiar. A hand painted sign and $7,000, 73 it was the year.
Hmm.
My goodness sakes, that's amazing. So
quite a success story.
Yeah. So well done, George. Maybe you can go play golf or something like that. Or maybe come visit you over there. I don't know. That wouldn't be a bad thing. Anyway, so that's George. We've got Patrick Meyer here coming up in just a moment. Winning CEO, president, CMO, board member for Fortune 500 and emerging tech companies, business 3.0 expert. Yes, he is. Digital, mobile, social, e-commerce. And we're going to talk more about Patrick. As Brad said, he was also a part of the Marketing Insider for many years here with the Advertising Show as well, and it's fun having Patrick back and getting a chance to say hello to him one more time. Here's an interesting thing that came out of Ad Age. Lexus making big moves to regain growth. What they had happened is the Japanese earthquake and tsunami back in 2011. Lexus lost its luxury sales title after an 11-year run from 2000 to 2010. Toyota's luxury division fell to number 3 behind BMW and Mercedes. And now they're trying to regain some momentum this summer with the launch of a 2014, it's an IS model, to win the younger luxury car buyers who prefer its German rivals. They're using more aggressive ads. And the slogan there is, you can choose to blend in or you can choose to blend out. So that's according to one television spot. It's your move. And I thought that was rather interesting that Lexus would do something like that, because traditionally you would think of a Lexus as being an older person's car, something that wouldn't be possibly as much desired as a Mercedes or a BMW or something. What do you think about that?
They're taking a chapter, I think, out of BMW and Mercedes' history book here. Mercedes created the C-Class. BMW has a small one series that they launched a few years back. And it was all about attracting the young market their product, simply because the older market's eventually dying off or going to get into some kind of saving situation as they get on into retirement. I'm not talking about the affluent 7 Series, 5 Series owner, but those that, maybe had it as a company car and don't see a need for it on down the road. So frankly, Ray, I'm surprised they're just now this late getting into the game on appealing to a younger market. And then so when you think about it, mm-hmm. Lexus really doesn't do much with regard to strong branding, advertising, and marketing like BMW does, lesser degree Mercedes, but still Mercedes does as well. Lexus, to my way of thinking, Ray, you tell me, but they seem to be resting on past glory and kind of rode the momentum mm-hmm. of the cachet of Lexus and the car and the brand and what it was all about without doing much aggressive brand marketing effort for the Lexus brand itself. Big groups and markets tend to do very basic general Lexus advertising that does a sales event without mentioning a particular price, and they do it seasonally. But yet BMW and Mercedes, I think, are just a bit more aggressive in that regard.
I agree, and I also think the fact that they're resting on past success is a large mistake. That should never happen, and obviously it's not doing them a lot of good at this particular point in time. Jeremy Kent is with us, our European News Desk reporter, and Jeremy's got a lot of stuff to tell us this week here at the Advertising Show.
Hello and welcome to sunny Soho in the heart of London. This is the European News Desk. This week, High Street Banks unveil Zap mobile payments, Nielsen announced multi-screen measuring, and Twitter defines Argos advertising. Vocalink has announced a new cellular payment service supported by the UK's major banks. Called Zap, the new service is expected to launch to consumers in 2014, but it's already promoting its benefits to businesses and consumers alike. Vocalink claims to bridge the gap between e-commerce and mobile commerce and enable smartphone users to make direct payments in a retail environment. Owned by a consortium of 18 major banks, Vocalink already dominates key interbank payment services, processing 90% of UK salaries and 70% of all UK bill payments. That's nearly $7 trillion per annum. The size and nature of the consortium members will give Zap a big step up as it seeks to capture the mobile payments market. According to Justin Bassini, Zap's CMO, the new app will be agnostic and pre-installed within individual banks' own smartphone applications. Bassini says the major retailers and cellular companies will be invited to invest in Zap, completing the circle of commercial interests. Nielsen is also trialling a new service. This one is designed to measure combined TV and online audiences, and it's understood that Unilever and Mondelez have already signed up. Nielsen claims that its new product is the first of its kind and will reveal how many people saw an ad in total and whether or not they saw it online or on TV or both. It will show frequency, gross rating points and unique audience impressions on a daily basis and provide advertisers with an insight into how online and TV complement each other. Finally, UK catalogue retailer Argos has provided viewers with the opportunity to shape its summer TV commercials via Twitter. Two new 40-second spots will retain the established Argos space alien characters. And in the first commercial, the alien family discover that their number is going to grow by one. Viewers will be encouraged to vote for the name of the new arrival via hashtag NameOurBaby, and the viewer's choice will be played out this weekend as the advertising show goes to air. Argos ad agency CHI and Partners has launched a new Twitter feed dedicated to the alien family, at Argos Aliens, where Twitter users will be able to interact with the family as a whole. The ad represents the first time Argos has used Twitter as a feedback mechanism, but in the past, the company has experimented with other social media, such as Facebook and Shazam. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Hey, Jeremy Kent, thanks as always for your contribution here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schilling and Brad Forsyth. Patrick Meyer, the marketing insider. If you've been a fan of The Advertising Show, Patrick gave us such great reports for so many years here with the marketing insider, and obviously has done a lot of things since then and before then. And up to today, let's bring you up to date quickly here. Patrick is a unique hybrid among business leadership in building and reinventing Fortune 500 brands, businesses with both line marketing experience, that includes Coca-Cola, Gillette, Nabisco, and senior consulting role in the C-suite of the world's top companies like Miller Lite, Jeep, Dodge, Chrysler, Virgin, Pepsi, Unilever, Volkswagen, and a series of 3.0 startups. In November of 2009, Patrick transitioned an extended working relationship with SourceBit CEO Rohit Signalt into a new role as president of software development leader. This reflects a theme in Meyer's work where marketing and emerging technology are fused into business-driving solutions. SourceBits, by the way, is an India, U.S.-based leader in mobile apps, gaming, digital solutions, and a lot more. And Patrick now has a book that we want to talk about today. And I could go on and on about this bio, obviously. But and Patrick, we really got to know you back in the Fusion 5 days. But my goodness, you've done a lot of things since then. Welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be with you guys. This is like a homecoming, and I look so fondly back on the time, the several years we were together, because you guys let me break it wide open every week when I would talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in marketing and advertising, you know, kind of from the C-suite perspective.
Yeah.
And you let me be scandalously insightful and innovative and call it. And it was great fun.
Very good. We appreciate you, too, as well. You know, Brad, this book is pretty cool, no doubt about it. And it's unique as well. Go ahead.
You know, we're going to talk about the book, but I want to pick up on something Patrick just said. It is a homecoming, Patrick, and Ray and I both have tuxedos on today. And I was surprised to see you show up in a dress, a formal dress. With that crown on the top of your head. It's very nice for you to do that, but you surprised both Ray and I.
Yeah, really.
Okay, enough of that. Let's get serious for a moment. You know, before I get into the interview here, Patrick, we used to do a segment on the show, and we used to gain insight into people that we interviewed, and we usually ended on that. And I want to start with that and talk a little, get inside your head and let our audience get to know Patrick on a personal level before we start talking about what is, as Ray said, a wonderful book. And you've been up to very interesting things that we're going to share with our audience. But before we do that, what do you think would be the most individual, single thing that our audience would be surprised to learn about Patrick Meyer?
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, I do keynote speaking, and I always want to talk about where it's going, and mobile and social and innovation, whatever. And I walked up a stage, and someone said to me, you know, you could be a motivational speaker. And I said, what would I motivate people about? And they said, your stories. They just love your stories. So next day I was up on stage in front of a group of people, and I said, when I was a little boy, I was a loser with a capital L. And I went on to tell them the story about being, you know, kind of a young runt, you know, and challenged in my schoolwork. And much like Steve Jobs and even Richard Branson, two of my heroes, when you're challenged when you're younger, it's amazing how you strive to really push out and find out what you love and do some amazing things. So I guess the thing that would surprise people is that I would even be up on stage talking about shifting your game and telling what a loser I am. And then I go on and tell them how I overcame that and found my passion and found my way to where we are now.
That's a great story, too, and nobody would have guessed something like that. You are certainly a dynamic force in our industry and in life in general. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, that is interesting, Patrick. I think that's a great tone to set for our audience going forward. We're going to bounce back and forth between talking about innovation and excellence as well as your book. Let's start with the easy thing in talking about your book. Who did you write this wonderful book for, Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile? Who should be reading this book?
Well, this book is for anybody that really wants to embrace where it's all going. It's a book about future insights and, you know, where mobile and social and e-commerce, everything that's coming at us. You know, I call it, there's business 2.0, which is 18 years old, which is browsers and Bill Gates and Microsoft and websites and web pages. That's business 2.0. 3.0 is where it's all shifting to, with mobile and smartphones and iPads and you know, big data and digital driving everything. And what I set out to do was to create a book based on the insights from Steve Jobs and also Eric Schmidt and Google and Zuckerberg, the insights behind it all, so that people could shift their game. And so I find that it's being used in classrooms right now. It's being in universities. It's, you know, a lot of CEOs are using it and CMOs to kind of share with their team as to where do you go with mobile? How do we drive the business? It's not just immediate. You know, it's not like mobile is a media channel. It's a way to completely shift your business dynamics.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we've been I'm sorry, Patrick. We've been talking about mobile for a long time on the show, and Ray and I were both talking before today's interview about how it has evolved to the degree that it has in terms of the expertise and understanding really how to leverage mobile for the marketing benefit of stakeholders in various brands and industries. And there was not too many years ago that mobile was talked a lot about, but people, marketers, really didn't understand how best to leverage mobile. They understood technology, what it was capable of doing, but they really were all over the place in terms of figuring out how to utilize it from a marketing and branding standpoint. How would you, I mean, first of all, would you agree with that characterization, and where are we today, and when did it become more, I don't know, more marketing savvy from the users of mobile? When did that happen? What was there? Was any one flex point that happened where people woke up to the power of mobile?
Well, you know, what I saw going on, it started with Steve Jobs and the iPhone. And I was already doing stuff in mobile, but when the iPhone came and the apps came it broke it wide open. And it gave a user experience that was like none other. And people were captivated. And then the iPad came. And then, of course, Google stepped in and Android came and started to run after the iPhone. And, you know, and obviously now with Samsung and the Galaxy, you know, they've just moved to a whole different level and are leading out in front of Apple, at least at this point.
Wow.
The inflection point was someplace around 50% of the population in the U.S. having smartphones. Right now it's up around 65 to 68% of the population of people owning phones have smartphones. It over-indexes even higher with young adults in cities and also middle to higher income. So as soon as it got to a tipping point of everybody had them, for the most part, brands had been dabbling with apps and playing with text programs, etc. But it got to a point where it was apparent that it wasn't just a channel or a media type. It was really a way to engage people in the occasion, a brand in hand. When you've got a smartphone in your hand, you're standing in the store, all of a sudden you can change people's minds or you can aid them and you can help to drive businesses and brands. That was the tipping point. And the key is the occasion. It's all about unlocking in the moment. It's no longer reaching frequency of seeing many ads and getting a perception in your brain. It's actually right there in your hand as you're starting to engage with a brand or friends and, you know, other needs that you have.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forrest, I have Patrick Myers, our special guest, and actually an alumnus of the Advertising Show as well. Steve Jobs and the Mobile, the World of Mobile, is his new book. It's a unique book and unusual, and one that you really ought to own. We're going to continue our conversation here with Patrick in just a moment on the Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kinds of kids?
Well, it's great to have you here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth and a very special guest, Patrick Meyer. He was our marketing insider, and he's doing a whole bunch of things since then as well. You've heard about the ugly dog contest, Brad. Did you see that just recently?
The dog wasn't that ugly this year.
The dog was not that ugly, but the reason I bring that up is one of the things I thought Patrick would talk about. Most recently, one of his dogs became not an ugly dog contest, but a 2012 Westminster medalist. That's a pretty cool deal, Patrick. Congratulations to you and your dog.
Well, I thank you. I'm actually blushing that you're bringing up my dog, but my dog, Duke, just happened to be a great puppy with amazing genes. So we put him out on the circuit, not me showing him. I wouldn't have a clue as to what to do walking around in the ring.
Yeah.
But my dog crushed it and won everything, became a grand champion. And then we went into Madison Square Garden, and he was the little rookie. He was the teenager. And all the political kennels with all the sponsors and whatever. And my dog goes out there and wins the whole damn thing in Madison Square Garden.
Were you there with the dog as well? I mean, were you one of the ones walking the dog around or no?
No, I've got a professional handler that does that.
Those are the people that dress up in silly clothes and walk funny.
And look funny when they're running around.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I was going to say, that's not you, obviously. Go ahead, Brad.
So what year was that, Ray?
2012.
Congratulations, Patrick. Yeah. You did your homework, Ray. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We've mentioned the book. We know anybody interested in mobile, the history of mobile, where we are today with mobile, how to leverage mobile to the benefit of marketers and advertisers. We know that if you're interested in that, Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile by Patrick Meyer is the book you need to go buy. It's also available certainly through digital platforms as well. So Kindle buyers and others
get the book.
I'm sorry.
Go get the book. Yeah.
Go get the book.
Yeah.
So you use the term CEO futurist, Patrick. How is this person different than today's traditional CEO?
Well, I was talking, a lot of the CMO and CEO friends of mine in the last 4 or 5 years have asked me to come in and speak to their marketing groups or, you know, I spoke at the DMA as a keynote back in October. And the theme, and I got to tell you that this goes back to what I did with you guys. You guys taught me that in 3-4 minutes, you need to A, hook them, B, deliver insights, C, bring it through in a case example, and then give them meaningful prescriptive value that can have an impact immediately. So that's how I did my episodes with you. So when I speak on stage, I would use that formula. How do I give people value? Not somebody on stage just talking about what they did that's great and not relating to the audience. So I would crank people up with, you know, five key insights, five key drivers, illustrated examples, showing, you know, demos of new smartphones and new apps and, you know, showing all kinds of fun stuff that's breaking around the world. Well, as I did that, people say, can you come and do that at my company? Well, one of the speaking experts I was working with, a coach, said, you know, you're really a futurist, but you do it in a pragmatic way. You tell people where it's going, and then you bring it back to, so what do we do now? So that's how the CEO Futurist came about, because I was a CEO and CMO and president of Fortune 500 companies, startups, et cetera, and then also helping startups today, tech ventures, mobile ventures, et cetera. So that's how the CEO Futurist nickname came about from my speaking around the world. I actually just came back from Argentina. I was speaking down there on behalf of the DMA to several hundred people in the Hard Rock Cafe on stage. So that's what I do, help people shift their game around mobile, social, digital, e-tail, innovation, young target groups, etc.
There's got to be a lot of interest and a passion for that information, because it seems to me so many companies just don't get it. They don't understand, they want to understand, and they're usually sent off in the wrong direction. So you're kind of setting them straight there.
Well, there are a lot of drivers that people don't even think about. You know, so many companies don't have a roadmap that integrates mobile and social into their business. They might have a social agency doing stuff, and they may have the mobile going on inside the digital stuff. But you really need to take your business and marketing plan and have a whole infusion of mobile social insights and direction. For example, how many agencies have social, let's say with a PR agency or maybe a social boutique, and then a whole different group doing mobile, and yet the two are intertwined, they drive one another. They have to be fused together. Well, that's just an obvious thing, but most companies aren't doing that.
You know, I was going to ask you what some of the bigger clients and agencies are making with regard to mistakes, but I think you just nailed it. Is social usually handled by the PR department of clients and agencies? Is that what you're suggesting? I certainly understand the idea of integrating both together, and you're saying they're handled as silos and separate today. Is social usually handled by PR?
Yeah, a lot of times we're by a boutique, a specialty boutique.
Yeah, but driven by PR, right? I mean, that tends to be the – is that a mistake when marketers are using social media primarily as a PR vehicle, and are there other ways to use social that they're missing?
Oh, you have to think about social as a way to drive the business and do it with mobile and also do it with retail. You've got 75% of female gatekeeper shoppers that are using smartphones pre and post or during their shopping excursions.
Sure.
Well, so mobile. But they're also reaching out to their friends. What do you think about this? Should I buy the Xbox or the PlayStation for my son? So there are ways to fuse them all together, from retail to mobile to social and then your core business. You just have to think about it a different way, instead of putting it in silos.
You know, that's a great setup to talk about NFC. You're working for a mobile tech company currently called Thin Air. NFC, for those that may not know the term, near field communication. I'll let you explain the NFC concept for those that are not familiar with it, and then we'll talk a little bit about the company you're with and some of the innovative things that Thin Air has underway, starting with defining NFC for us, Patrick.
Okay. Most people would know this as the Samsung Galaxy. And when they used to see the commercials where the two phones would touch together,
yeah,
and you'd hear a little ping and stuff would jump from one phone to the other, that is near-field communication. It's the ability of a radio frequency wave to move between two phones and to create an interaction in a frictionless way. And the big place that everybody thought NFC was going to be important is in the wallets, the Google wallet, the e-wallets, et cetera. And the ability to tap and pay, well, that's a radio frequency signal going from the phone to a little chip that's in a terminal, and then it responds back, and a payment's made in a secure way. But the big aha that happened in the last year or so is, as every major manufacturer of smartphones, with the exception of Apple, I'll come to them in a moment, every major one is shipping phones that have this NFC capability where you can tap on things and bring them to life. Well, the big surprise is that the consumer was more interested not in doing payments, but more interested in tapping on things and getting a recipe, or tapping and getting a video, or tapping and getting a free song. So this whole wave is going on with near-field communication. The consumer doesn't necessarily know what it's called, but it's starting to take off now as all the phones are shipping with it. Now, Apple is rumored to come in the fall. They've got patents and all kinds of things, and, you know, Apple will come with something like NFC and do it in a total way, from stores to media to the product, et cetera. So it's really an exciting area because it can impact retail, media, it can bring media to life, it can impact product. So NFC with chips in shoes and chips in media and on the shelf at retail, you can tap and little videos pop up, and you can tap and pick up a coupon and tap and pick up a recipe. Really, pretty exciting.
We recently looked into NFC business cards as well, which seemed to be an interesting sidebar to that as well. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I was just going to ask, Ray, I know we need to take a break. One final question following up to what you just said. Why is Apple, the company for innovating in the mobile category, so late in the game with NFC? That's puzzling.
Well, you know, there are two things that are going on. NFC, when they come with it, they'll come with it the right way, because Apple always does a total ecosystem play, and they focus on the user experience. That's why Apple, when they come, will do it right. But here's the bigger issue. You know, as writing a book on Steve Jobs, being a disciple of Steve Jobs, when he passed away 18 months ago, there was a four-year pipeline that he referenced that he had developed with the team. And you know what they've done since then? They've only done upgrades. There's not a new product that's come since then. And if you notice also when Apple talks on stage, they talk now about the technology and the resolution and the speed. Steve Jobs never talked about, the technical parts. He said,
right,
this changed the way kids think. This will change how you go about your life. And he showed you things that were about the user experience, not about the tech. That's the problem. Tim Cook and Apple have just dropped back, and they haven't done anything that would be bold Steve Jobs like.
Wow. That's a dramatic turn for Apple as well, isn't it? It's an interesting time in space for them. Patrick Meyer is our special guest here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. The book is called Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile. It's a 2-in-1 book, and it's got some really cool stuff inside. An interesting presentation on behalf of Patrick, and what a great job that is. We're going to continue our conversation here in just a moment. Stay with us. This indeed is the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. In conversation today with Patrick Meyer, an alumnus of the show, the Marketing Insider, and a brand new book. It's called Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile, a C-level focused book, full of great information. You've got Sir Richard and Steve, Patrick, that you absolutely adore, love. They're iconic in your life. How are they similar? How are they different? Are they share some similarities between the two guys?
When I did work for Branson and the Virgin Mobile team, they were relentless about focusing on the user experience. And, it was all about what's a better deal for the consumer, And in their office, they had this mission statement that when you read it, you wanted to scream with delight. As a matter of fact, I think I read it one time on the Marketing Insider. I read the whole damn mission statement because Virgin just does it a better way. They understand what people want. Well, that was Steve Jobs. He was always looking for the best user experience to really push it and deliver where people would scream with delight. And that's the commonality between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Now, like my story about being a loser, the two of them were challenged when they were young in life. And, you know, they set out on a very different path, the road less traveled. And, you know, they found greatness.
Wow.
Very, very innovative as well.
That's cool.
You know, I want to go back to something that I think our audience would be interested in a follow-up, and that is, you're right, if and when, and I'm assuming you're correct, this fall when Apple comes out in a big way with doing NFC the right way and in a full, complete way, and for the sake of your company, Thin Air, I certainly hope they do, because it would change certainly the entire landscape in that area. Right. But you didn't sound like you were all that high on future expectations for Apple. And certainly Samsung seems to be giving them a run for their money outside of the U.S. And there's some question as it reflects, I don't know, share value. I'm not giving financial advice here, but share value seems to be in question as well with regard to Apple. What are your thoughts about near-term and long-term for Apple? Do you think that with Jobs not being there, that and all this chit-chat about technology as opposed to user experience and innovation is going to eventually cost Apple what it once was with Steve Jobs at the helm?
Well, you know, some of the brightest people in the world are at Apple, and assets, and, you know, there's a pipeline of stuff that's been developed, there are patents. So I don't count them out. I think it's more of a leadership question. You know, Tim Cook came out of, I believe it was procurement or manufacturing side, and, you know, he's running the company. And just last week they announced that there was a change in his compensation package to focus on share value. Some X percent is now being moved over all to focus on share value. So I think it's about leadership. And they've got the horsepower, they've got the patents and the products. On, you know, I was listening to Cook talk about wearables and wearable technology, whether it's a watch or things that are on your body. You know, that's coming. And, you know, Apple's the one who will perfect it and bring it forward. They just need to step up and bring it to the market, you know, and they've just been asleep at the wheel for the last.
I think that's a diplomatic way of saying it, Patrick, and we'll keep our eye on Apple, and I think you're right. I agree with your thinking on that. Let's talk about Thin Air. Let's talk about the company you're currently with, a leader in the NFC category, certainly an innovator, I would say. Tell us a little bit background on NFC, Thin Air, rather, and how you guys are utilizing NFC, and then we'll give some examples of what Thin Air is doing today that I think our audience might find intriguing and interesting, because you guys really are on the forefront of NFC utilization.
Okay. Well, you know, because I ranted and raved about this for years. As a marketing person, as a brand guy, all I care about is, does it drive the business? You know, so I sat down with the gang from Thin Air. I was president of SourceBits, leader in mobile and social gaming apps. We were doing amazing apps, top 10 apps, et cetera, having a lot of fun. And I sat down with these guys, and they said, do you know about NFC? I said, well, you know, we got 800 people that are in Bangalore, and in our lab, we're always working on things like NFC. But none of them are pragmatic solutions yet. And they said, well, let us show you. And they did a demo where they tapped on a piece of point of sale, and up came a video. And then they hit one or two buttons, and next thing you know, they're socializing it. They're downloading an app right from the store directly, or they're linking to an e-wallet. I said, whoa. I said, that's marketing nirvana. That's what every marketer has been waiting for. Deeper engagement, activation, socialization, on-ramp to retail, on-ramp to mobile commerce, driving ROI, and oh, by the way, you're capturing data with every bit of interaction so I can come back and remarket. So at that point I said, you've really got something here. Now, also, they have patents and a whole platform and partners and ecosystem that we've built. So we're working with Adidas and Verizon and Kraft and Mondelez International and Unilever. So it's really exciting over the last couple of years. I came on as a partner, and then they needed a CMO, and I said, okay, I'll do this part-time until I can find a CMO. And we built up a pretty successful company, and we're leading the way as an enterprise marketing platform.
So some of these initiatives you have with Verizon and other companies, would our audience be surprised to learn about these initiatives? Are these under the radar? Are these things that are being tested, if you will, before they go public? Can you share any of these initiatives with us?
Absolutely. Just to give you a couple examples, right now, we just broke this week with Unilever and Good Humor Ice Cream and Magnum and Klondike, where there are thousands of touch points all over the markets in New York and Boston. So you're walking along Copley Square or Times Square, you see a bus shelter, which you would probably never even notice, but now you can tap on it, bring it to life, and you tap on it, and up comes a user experience. It tells you where the closest Good Humor is, you know, 200 feet away at Duane Reade. You walk into Duane Reade, there's a big ice stack. You tap on it and engage even more. You know, so this whole idea of media and retail and even special events like in Bryant Park and also in other parks where they're showing movies and sampling free ice cream as all part of summer. Well, that the whole effort was around mobile. And how close is the nearest Good Humor truck or the nearest store selling Good Humor? So there's an example of transforming media and retail and consumer engagement at events and at a Good Humor truck in a whole new way. And that's just one area.
Wow.
If you want to give you another example, we're doing something in the footwear area, where you tap on footwear and it comes to life. Or we're doing other things in retail, and where you walk into a department store, and as soon as you walk through the door, there's point of sale and signage, and you begin to interact and find out what's going on. So it's breaking in so many areas.
You know, that's so interesting. Are there any initiatives or innovative marketing ideas that you can project on into future, say, a few years down the road that's just in the talking stage right now where it will happen, but technology or personal use needs to catch up with where you see this market going?
That's a good question.
Well, right now, about 30% of the population have got NFC phones, right? But it's coming quick. Every phone that's shipping has got it, and it's going on around the world. Different countries at different stages of development. But to give you the example, with this NFC interaction in your phone, you can transform just about anything. I'll give you an example. Let's say we take Yankee Stadium or whatever team you want to choose. Or it could even be, let's say, Dallas Cowboys or Houston Texans, whatever.
Yeah.
You're sitting in the seat, and I say, Ray, Brad, let's get a beer. Let's get a Miller Lite or whatever. I tap on the seat, and there's a little chip built into the seat, and up comes on my phone an interaction where it says, what would you like? And I say, I'll have a steak sandwich, and then I tap on a Miller Lite, and, you know, I order for you, too, and we send it. And 10 minutes later, it's delivered to my seat, the whole interactive experience. Oh, by the way, there's a Ford truck billboard out in the outfield. I can interact with that and pick up a $3,000 coupon or whatever that I can take to retail. I can play a game and interact with everybody else in the stadium right off my phone and that chip that's in my seat. So that's just another example of take something and completely change it and make it more dynamic for the consumer.
Wow.
You know, that's so cool. Thinair.net is where you can go to learn more about Patrick's company. Ray, I want to just mention one thing. It's
yes.
buried in this material, but it's something I think it deserves attention. Patrick's book, which we've been plugging throughout the show today, Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile. All profits of this book, Ray, will be donated to help college students follow in Steve Jobs' footsteps. Meyer is helping found the Villanova Innovation, Creativity, and Entrepreneurship Center and the Meyer ICE Award, which is an annual award given to both in an honorary and a financial way to help emerging college students to follow in Apple's visionary footsteps. So, you know, this is not about Patrick Meyer. It's not about trying to generate funds and make money off of a book. He's got a great idea, I think, in helping funds go to a well-meaningful purpose here in helping young people follow in Steve Jobs' footsteps. So hats off to you, Patrick.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling too, Patrick. I mean, you know, you got a great book here, but now look what it's doing. It's doing double duty and something like that. So well done.
Well, you know, I have to say thank you for highlighting that. What's exciting is that, you know, all across the country and around the world, young people, a lot of people, are focused on new technologies where they can create startup ideas and transform businesses. At Villanova, I helped the dean reinvent the business school, because you know me. Like, if we're going to graduate students, they need to be innovative, creative, and entrepreneurs coming out having an impact. So we reinvented the business school, and we built a plank into the whole approach, which was innovation. And we then created a center of excellence, and then in my dad's name, we created an annual award called the ICE Award for Innovation, Creativity, and Entrepreneurship. We give it out annually, and we give seed money to students that have got ideas that could be innovative and transforming.
Wow.
And we've done that for the last 5 years. And then when Steve Jobs passed away, we actually provided added funding in his name to recognize what he had done in the ICE way, and to help more students with startup ideas.
Good for you. Are you scheduled, by the way, to fly on the Spaceship One with Sir Richard anytime soon?
You know, that's a really good idea. I think I'm going to be on that. Let's hope certain things happen and... You know, maybe all three of us are getting on that plane.
Patrick, it'll happen.
Patrick's waiting for an NFC coupon because it's $200,000, for those that may not know.
Well, Groupon will get right on that.
Buy one, get one free coupon, I think. And in that case, he will call us.
Yeah.
One final question.
He likes me more, by the way, Brad, so I'll probably.
One final question to end on, although that was a very great explanation there on your charitable donation for proceeds for your book, not proceeds, but all profits. Albert Einstein, decades ago, Patrick, was quoted as saying, imagination is more important than intelligence. I've got my thoughts, but I'd like to hear you, a guy that's spent decades in innovation. What do you think Albert Einstein meant by the quote, imagination is more important than intelligence?
Oh, you know, I'm so with him in his comment. You know, I never think of myself as being, you know, intelligent or brilliant or whatever. I do know that I have a passion, and I see that, and try to inspire that in people, in ideas and creating things and driving businesses and finding what you're really passionate about. I think that creativity, that inclination to innovate and explore and be inquisitive, is so much more important than being, you know, number one in your class with the best SAT scores. You know, I'll take anybody that's curious and, you know, like, would you have said that Richard Branson and Steve Jobs were geniuses? When they were younger, I would probably say no.
Right.
But with curious and inquisitive and motivated and passionate, and then people nicknamed them later as geniuses.
Yeah. They earned that title, no doubt about it. And you've done a great job thus far as well. Congratulations on a great book. Go get it, Steve Jobs and the World of Mobile. You can go to patrickmeyer.com as well to find out more about what Patrick is up to these days. And just check out all this cool stuff. Patrick, again, great re-engaging with you as well.
Can I just give you one last piece for the audience?
Please.
The cover of my book, you tap on it and it comes to life. And it was my innovative book of the year. And won a number of awards, so it's really quite different. Tap on it, comes to life, and the pages come to life as well.
It's time to let the dog out, by the way.
And by the way, that's not an award-winning dog. That's a dog from Maui Humane Society. Thank you.
Oh, that's the other one. Okay, I got you. I'm sorry. Don't know where these dogs are coming from, but that's okay.
There, great being with you guys.
Likewise, Patrick. Thanks so much.
Great, Patrick. Great show today.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth. It's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production, and we will talk to you again soon.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.